The book of Titus, chapter 2, book of Titus, chapter 2, read very familiar verses 11 through verse 14. For the grace of God that bringeth salvation hath appeared to all men, teaching us that denying ungodliness and worldly lust, we should live soberly, righteously, and godly in this present world, looking for that blessed hope and the glorious appearing of the great God and our Savior, Jesus Christ, who gave himself for us, that he might redeem us from all iniquity, and purify unto himself a peculiar people, zealous of good works. By way of setting, Paul is the author. We see that in chapter 1 and verse 1. Paul, a servant of God. See that he's writing to Titus. We see in verse 4 of chapter 1, to Titus. So it is Paul, a servant of God, to Titus, mine own son, after the common faith. We learn from 2 Corinthians chapter 8 and verse 23 that Titus was a fellow laborer with Paul, that he was a helper to Paul. The last time Titus is mentioned is 2 Timothy 4 and 10. You've got to remember that chronologically, 2 Timothy would have been the last epistle written by Paul, though that's not how it occurs in our Bibles, but chronologically, 2 Timothy comes after Titus. So in 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 10 is the last time that we see Titus, and we see there that he was gone unto Dalmatia, which is modern-day Yugoslavia. So, in the book of Titus, Paul had been on the island of Crete. We see that in verse 5. And he's left Titus there. He's left Titus on the island of Crete. He's left him there to continue and to strengthen the work that had been begun, the churches that were being established, just as he left Timothy at Ephesus. So Paul is writing Titus concerning the saved individuals upon this island of Crete. Notice in verse 1 of chapter 1, Paul, a servant of God, an apostle of Jesus Christ, according to the faith of God's elect and the acknowledging of the truth, which is after godliness. Now in chapter 1 and verse 5, we see that he's left there to set in order the things that are lacking. That was Paul's instruction to Titus. I've left thee in Crete to set in order the things that are lacking. So that indicates that there were some problems amongst God's people there on the island of Crete. There were some things that were lacking, and they needed to be strengthened in these things. And as you read on in chapter 1, you begin to see what some of these things, what some of the problems were. We see in verse 10 and 11, there were false teachers, and for there are many unruly or disorderly and vain talkers and deceivers, especially they of the circumcision, which would be Jews, this was Jew and Gentile, whose mouths must be stopped, who subvert or overthrow whole houses. And here's how they do that: teaching things which they ought not. And the reason they do it is for filthy lucre's sake or for their own gain. That doesn't necessarily mean for money. It just simply means for their own gain. Certainly money can be included. Titus also was to make sure that the pastors of the churches were qualified and that they would be able by sound doctrine to oppose and silence these false teachings. So that was one of the problems. We see another problem was the overall character of the Christians themselves. In verse 12 of chapter 1, one of themselves, that is Christians, even a prophet of their own, said the Christians are always liars. Evil beast, or they're barbarous liars, slow bellies, which simply means they're lazy, they're gluttonous. So this was the character of the people on this island. Beginning with chapter 2 and verse 1, he's told to speak the things which become sound doctrine. So now Paul's telling Timothy how to carry on this work, how to strengthen the work, how to bring about the things that are lacking. And what they needed was sound doctrine, teaching that aligns with doctrine, teaching that aligns with the truth. And then in verses 2 through 6 of chapter 2, and also verses 9 and 10, he singles out various groupings that are in the churches. He talks about the aged men, he talks about the aged women, he talks about the young men, talks about the young women, and he singles them out and tells Titus specific truths to teach these individuals. There were specific truths for each one of these age groups that Titus was to teach. And then in verse 7 and 8, he instructs Titus concerning his own behavior. He says, in all things, showing thyself a pattern of good works, in doctrine, showing uncorruptness, gravity, sincerity, sound speech that cannot be condemned, that he that is of the contrary part, so we see there was opposition into the churches at that time, may be ashamed, having no evil thing to say of you. And then coming to our text, verse 11, we see that word for, indicating that there is a relationship to what he is about to write. There is a relationship between that and what he has previously written. Then we see what follows the word for. It would be like the umbilical cord to the previous verses. They're connected to the previous verses. The word for really gives us the foundation, gives us the basis for what has already been said and for what is about to be said. It serves as an encouragement for what has already been said. It serves as an encouragement to set things in order, to oppose the error that was so common in Crete, to do this by sound doctrine, to introduce God's people to their duties. He's given the foundation of this. Here's the reason you should do this. This is the reason this needs to be done. He goes on and he says, for the grace of God. For the grace of God. And he goes on to say that this grace of God teaches. All the saved have an active teacher within them. That, of course, the Holy Spirit. But there's also the teaching of the grace of God. And because all of God's people have this in them, this is why he's instructed to use sound doctrine in verse 1. Because of what is in God's people, they will accept it. They will accept it because of the teaching that is taking place within their own hearts. So I want to speak tonight on the school of saving grace. It is a school that all the saved have been enrolled in. It is a school that all the saved are in. There are no dropouts in this school. No one can drop out of this school. There is no one who can opt out of this school. The grace of God teaching us. So we want to look at, first of all, the instructor. And that is, of course, the grace of God. So God's grace here is personified. The grace of God. Now, the general summation of those words, the grace of God, would, of course, include God's plan of redemption. Jesus taking humanity to himself, his birth, his perfect life, all of this, of course, culminating in his substitutionary death. But certainly the grace of God certainly includes his burial, certainly includes his triumphant resurrection, his ascension. We all know that it includes all the blessings that Christ purchased and secured for us. It is the unmerited favor of God. We all know that. It is God's activity toward us in love and favor. That's what the grace of God is. It is God's activity toward us in love and favor. It's not just God's love and favor. It's God's activity toward us because he loves us, because he favors us. So it's God, the grace of God is God coming to us. It is God intervening in our lives. And he does this because he loves us. And he does this because he favors us. And this, of course, is not due to you and I. Therefore, it is grace. So the grace of God is really God made available to us. It's God coming to us. God made available to us. But notice here, the grace of God is active. It causes something. It says here, for the grace of God that bringeth. The grace of God that bringeth. That causes. The grace of God that produces. The grace of God that results in. The grace of God that leads to. The grace of God that generates. So, notice what is caused. The grace of God bringeth. So notice what is caused, what is produced, and what is generated by this grace of God. The grace of God bringeth salvation. That's what's generated by the grace of God. There is no salvation without the grace of God. So the grace of God bringeth, it produces, it results in, it generates salvation. Now, as we spoke Sunday night, salvation is an actual event. It's something that actually happens. It's something that transpires. And it's this grace of God that causes this event to transpire. Nothing else causes it to transpire. The grace of God bringeth salvation. The church does not bring salvation. You and I do not bring salvation. Doctrine does not bring salvation. The grace of God bringeth salvation. Now, God, in His grace, can use people, and does, uses doctrine, uses preaching. That can't be denied. But those are not the things that produce salvation. The grace of God bringeth salvation. Now, throughout the Scriptures, the grace of God, of course, is presented in many dimensions. It's presented by many different characteristics. In other words, it has many components. But here in Titus 2 and verse 11, Paul is speaking of a particular facet of the grace of God. And that is its saving power. The grace of God bringeth salvation. So he's talking, when he's speaking of grace here, he's talking about the grace of God that saves. So it is God's active favor bestowing the greatest gift upon those who deserve the greatest punishment. The grace of God bringeth salvation. The reason you and I are saved is because the grace of God brought salvation to us. The grace of God produced salvation in our lives. For the grace of God bringeth salvation. And then notice what he goes on to say here. So he's talking about this grace of God. Again, he's talking about his particular dimension of this grace, or a particular characteristic of this grace. He's talking about saving grace. He's not talking about the grace that gets us through a trial. That's a dimension of the grace of God, but that's not what he's talking about here. He's talking about the grace that brings salvation. And he says something else about it. He says, "For the grace that bringeth salvation hath appeared." So we know it's active because it brings salvation. But it's not only active, it's manifest. It says that it hath appeared. So the grace of God that bringeth salvation hath appeared. That is, it emerges. It's revealed. It becomes evident. It appears in giving salvation. Notice also that this grace of God is sufficient. "For the grace of God that bringeth salvation hath appeared to all men." Now it does not say. It does not say it has been conferred upon all men. That's not what it says. It says it hath appeared. That is, it's been manifest. People can see it. People can see this grace of God. But it's also that it hath appeared to all men means that it is suited to all people. This grace of God that brings salvation is suited to all people, to all kinds of people. That's why it's grace. It's not due to merit. The subject being spoken of is the active, unmerited love and favor of God that results in God saving a sinner. The grace of God that bringeth salvation hath appeared to all men. But then notice, the grace of God that saves a sinner is said to do something specific in us that are saved. We already know what it does. It saves. And then in verse 12, teaching us. Now, the us isn't the same as the all men. Teaching us. So this grace that brought salvation to our lives, that made salvation occur, that caused salvation, this grace that saves us now is personified as a teacher or a tutor. So the saving grace of God does not stop. It continues by teaching. So we see teaching us. So what is it to teach? Well, to teach is to educate. So the grace that saved our soul continues to educate us. It instructs us. It trains us. To teach is to explain. It explains. It schools us. It enlightens us. It illuminates us. It edifies us. It drills us. To teach is to drill. The same thing over and over and over again. Repetition. It's a drill. To teach is to demonstrate. This is all the grace of God does, the saving grace of God does all of these things. It's to discipline. Notice teaching. It's not for the grace of God to bring us salvation taught us, though it did, but it teaches us. That is, it is present tense. It continues to teach us. So the saving grace of God is an active teacher. The grace by which we are saved continues within us to teach us. There is no indication that this grace of God that bringeth salvation ever ceases in this activity of teaching. There's nothing here that indicates that this grace of God somewhere along the line ceases in teaching us. The grace of God that bringeth salvation teaches, teaching us. So now look at, we see the instructor is the grace of God. The us, of course, are the students. The students. Notice again, for the grace of God that bringeth salvation, teaching us. So we've got to ask, who is the us? Who does that refer to? Well, obviously, it refers to those to whom salvation has been brought by the grace of God. In other words, it's those who have been made the recipients of the salvation that this grace brings. In other words, it is the saved by grace. And all the saved by grace, as we already have said, have been enrolled in the school of saving grace. They become, the very moment you and I were saved, the very moment God began to deal with us, we became pupils. We became the students. And ever since that day the Lord saved us, we have been pupils in the school of God's grace. Again, there's no indication that anyone can drop out of this school. You can't just wake up in the morning and say, I want to drop out of the school of grace. You can't do that. You cannot opt out of this. You can't change the curriculum. If there is a teacher and there are pupils, be sure of this, there is also curriculum, which we will get to in a moment. So, notice, joined together is the grace of God and teaching. Those two things are joined together here. The grace of God that bringeth salvation and teaching. So, joined together is the grace of God and the people teaching us. And the us are the recipients of both. They are the recipients of the grace of God that bringeth salvation. But they are also the recipients of this teaching. So if you have a part in the grace of God that bringeth salvation, then you also have a part in being taught by this grace of God. So if you're not taught by this saving grace of God, what does that mean? Well, it means that you're not a part of the grace of God that bringeth salvation. They're all joined together, and they cannot be separated. So we have our teacher, the grace of God, teaching us, the students, the saved. What are we taught? That brings us to the curriculum. If there's teaching, something has to be taught. You can't have teaching and nothing be taught. So where there is teaching, something has to be taught. Now, we already seen that there were false teachers. We know what they were teaching, false doctrine. But we're told here that the grace of God to bring us salvation also teaches. But what does it teach? There must be a lesson. If there's teaching, there must be a lesson. So the subject matter that is taught is introduced by the next word. Notice teaching us, and then notice the next word. That. That introduces, that word that introduces the subject matter. The word that is used to identify something specific. When you say that piano, you're talking about a specific piano. You're not talking about all the pianos in the world. You're talking about a specific piano, that. As soon as the word that is used, something specific is being talked about. So he's already told us that the grace of God to bring us salvation teaches us. Now he's going to tell us the specifics of the teaching. Teaching us that. You and I are not asked to choose the subject matter that the grace of God teaches us. That has already been established. God has already established what this grace of God that saves our soul is going to teach us. And the curriculum is threefold. And it's found in three words in our text: the word teaching, the word live, and the word looking. It's a threefold curriculum. So notice the saved are being taught something specific. This is true of every saved individual. The saved are being taught to deny and renounce something specific. Verse 12, teaching us that denying, that's a very strong word. It means to utterly refuse, to turn down, to reject, to utterly decline, to renounce, to discard, to abandon. The saving grace of God teaches us to deny some specific things. That is, it teaches us to be actively engaged in denying ungodliness. Saving grace of God teaches every saved person to deny, to renounce ungodliness. Ungodliness is really an inward thing, godliness and ungodliness. It has reference here, of course, to ungodliness, has reference to the absence of godliness, which is the absence of reverence. So the grace of God teaches us to deny irreverence toward God. Every saved person knows that. Every saved person has this teacher within them that teaches them that they are not to show irreverence to God. Doesn't mean that they never do, but every saved person has this in them that they know better than to show irreverence toward God or disrespect toward God or a lack of devotion toward God. The grace, the very grace that saved us, teaches us that. If the saved person were never sat down in a church building and taught, they know by the saving grace of God that they are to deny ungodliness. They know that because that grace teaches them that. It goes on, not only are we to deny ungodliness, but we're to deny worldly lusts, meaning worldly desires, worldly inclinations, worldly yearnings, worldly determinations. It's that which attracts our sinful hearts and is drawn out by the world. See, that's what the world does. We have sinful hearts, and our hearts are attracted to sinful things. And the world has a way of drawing that out. But the grace of God that saved us teaches us to renounce those things, to deny ungodliness and worldly lust. But it also says that we are taught to live a certain way. Now notice the order is specific. In order to live a certain way, we have to first renounce some things. We have to renounce ungodliness. We have to renounce worldly lust. We should. This is what it teaches us. The word should, of course, immediately implies an obligation. The saved by grace are under obligation to God. The word should implies a duty. Again, as soon as you see the word should, something must follow. There has to be an act that follows. And what follows here is live. The grace of God that brings us salvation teaches us that we should live or behave or conduct ourselves a certain way. And to describe that way, he uses the word soberly. The grace of God that brings salvation teaches us that we are to live soberly. What does that mean? Well, it means just what sober means today. It means that we're not controlled by another substance. It means that there is self-control. We're no longer driven. We're no longer under the influence of our flesh. No longer under the influence. We're not driven by the world's appetites and passions and emotions. The Bible teaches, the saving grace of God teaches us that we're to live differently than those things. We should live soberly, which, of course, is a nonconformity to the world. But notice what else it teaches us how to live. We should live righteously. We should live soberly. That is, we should be clear-headed. We should think clearly. We should think scripturally. If you think worldly, you're not sober. You're drunk. You do not think clearly. To think soberly is to think correctly. It's to think biblically. That's what it is to be sober. He also teaches us that we should live righteously. The word righteously really has reference to the manner in which we relate to others. The saving grace of God teaches us that we are to live a certain way in relation to others. And Matthew 7, verse 12, the so-called golden rule, is how we are to live toward others. The grace of God teaches us that. The saving grace of God. Once again, a person is saved by the grace of God. Even if that person is never taught another thing by man, the grace that saved them teaches them to deny certain things. They just know that. I shouldn't do that. And I should do this. Teaches them to live soberly and righteously. That is to treat others correctly. And then he goes on to say, we should live godly. You deny ungodliness, and you live godly. You can't live godly without denying ungodliness. The two go together. The two go together. What is godliness? Or what is it to live godly? It's to take on God's character. It's simply to take on the character of God. It is our lives expressing God. It's you and I finding delight in God. It's you and I centering our life upon God, becoming occupied with God. The grace of God teaches us this. And that's why Paul told Titus, he said, just teach truth. And it'll work. Why will it work? Because the grace of God that bringeth salvation teaches them that what you're telling them is correct. The very grace that saved their soul teaches them to live soberly, righteously, godly. Grace of God teaches that. And I don't believe that a saved person, no matter how backslidden they get, can get away from that. That's why they're miserable. That's why a child of God cannot be happy in the world. They're going to be miserable because they've got this teacher in them that's teaching them all the time. You're to deny ungodliness. You're to live soberly. You're to live righteously. You're to live godly. The very grace that saved our souls. I'm glad that we can't get away from the grace of God that brought salvation to us originally. We can't get away from that grace. It just continues to teach us. And it does so in a powerful way. The third thing it teaches us, it teaches us to deny, it teaches us to live, it teaches us to look for something. He says there in verse 13 that we're to be looking. Again, present tense. The event that we're to be looking for is the glorious appearing of the great God and our Savior, Jesus Christ. Who is the focus of that event? Jesus Christ. And we're to be looking. Not just for the event, but we are to be focused on the person of that event, which is Jesus Christ. And the grace of God teaches us that. The grace of God that saved our soul teaches us that our hearts are to be drawn away from this world. If we're looking for the return of Jesus Christ, then our hearts are drawn from this world to heaven. So the very grace of God teaches us that our hearts are to be drawn from the world. That there is to be a detachment from the ways of the world. The saving grace of God teaches us that this world is not our home. You don't have to tell me that I don't fit in this world. The grace of God that brought salvation reminds us of that every single day. This is not our home. So why become tied down here? So it helps what the grace of God teaches us keeps our priorities in order. Notice the end result of this school of grace. We see it in verse 14. Verse 14. Gave himself, who being Christ, that he might redeem us from all iniquity, purify unto himself. The grace of God to bring us salvation purifies. But it also does something else. It makes us a peculiar people. It makes us a peculiar people. we that are saved, no matter how hard you try to fit in with this world, there's this grace of God in us that reminds us that we're different. It's always there. It's always there. Again, there's no dropouts here. The grace of God teaches us and produces a peculiar people. That is an unusual people. No one in their right mind would want to be normal today. Because what's normal today is downright wicked. And the grace of God just teaches us, or makes us, a peculiar people. The moment the Lord saved us, we became abnormal. We no longer fit in. And the further we go, that grace that brought salvation just keeps teaching us and making us an abnormal people. Perhaps there's another way of looking at it rather than abnormal. There's a lot of people don't want to be considered abnormal. I don't know why. Use the word extraordinary then. We're an extraordinary people. And how did that come about? The grace of God that bringeth salvation. Now, if I'm an extraordinary person, and I am by the grace of God, I'm not in myself, but by the saving grace of God, I'm extraordinary. Then I ought not want to live in the ordinary, but above that. So it's a people beyond normal by the standards of the world. Normal must have a standard. We're beyond normal by the world's standards. So the grace of God that bringeth salvation never causes one to be conformed to the world. It didn't when that salvation first happened, and it doesn't now. The grace of God that bringeth salvation conforms us to Christ, transforms us from the world. But notice what else it says. It's not only a peculiar people, but zealous. A zealous people. It is a fervent, passionate, devoted people. To what? To good works. That's outward. To good works. The very grace of God teaches us and makes us desirous of good works. I believe every saved person within their heart, somewhere, it might be buried under a lot of junk, but somewhere in their heart, there is a desire to do good works. What are good works? Biblical works. It's the ways of God. Best way to describe good works is just simply the ways of God. You do what Jesus Christ did, that's good works. So this grace of God that bringeth salvation, it's obvious that it's visible. It can be seen. It was seen when the Lord saved our soul. People, when we were saved, those old friends that came around us, you didn't have to say anything to them. They could see that there was a difference. Real salvation, it manifests itself in a visible difference. You can't hide it. It's visible. And then, of course, as it continues to teach us, the more visible it becomes. In the book of Acts, chapter 11, in verse 23, we see that Barnabas was sent from the Jerusalem church to Antioch. The reason he was sent there is they heard the news that souls were saved in Antioch. And we read in Acts 11, verse 23, that when he came and had seen the grace of God, he could see it. No one had to tell him. He could see the grace of God that brought salvation. So it's visible. In other words, he saw a marked and definite difference in them. Why would we not want the world to see a marked and definite difference in us? We all desire that, or should. The grace of God to bring us salvation has made a difference in our life. People can see that. And just seeing it will cause some enemies to rise up, will stir the passion of hatred in some. Maybe your own loved ones, your own family. But just seeing that grace of God, just it stirs. But it's visible. So I guess we need to ask ourselves, are we a manifestation of the grace of God that bringeth salvation? Are we a manifestation that we are being taught by the grace of God? We're not what we should be. None of us are. None of us are. None of us have reached perfection or where we should be in any area of our life. Not one single area. But it ought to be manifest in our life that we're being taught by the grace of God to do better, to be better. So I love those words, for the grace of God that bringeth salvation. I'm glad that my family tree is not what brought me salvation. That's not what brought me salvation. A Sunday school teacher is not what brought me salvation. A preacher is not what brought me salvation. The grace of God brought salvation. And the very day God saved our souls, that grace, God didn't just take that grace away, but that grace began to teach, and it's continued to teach until this day, until we're called home. That grace of God continues to teach. And that's why I believe over in 1 John, it talks about our spirit bearing witness with other people's spirit. You just know. You get around somebody that's saved, and the grace of God to bring us salvation is teaching them. The grace of God to bring us salvation is teaching you. There's a common spirit. You just know it. You can feel it. And that's what John talks about. So again, how thankful we ought to be for the grace of God that bringeth salvation. Because of that statement, the grace of God that bringeth salvation, there is hope. There is hope for the lost sinner. Because of that statement, because of the grace of God that bringeth salvation, there is hope for every one of our loved ones that are lost. Because of the grace of God, there's hope for our neighbors. There's hope. There's hope. There's hope. It's a phrase that ought to excite us. It's a phrase that ought to thrill us. The grace of God that bringeth salvation. If you're here and lost tonight, if you're ever going to be saved, it'll be the grace of God that brings salvation to your soul. It will not come any other way. In fact, it's in vain to even look for it any other place. If it ever comes to your soul, and we pray that it does, it'll come through the grace of God. Brother Jim, if you'd come and lead us verse song.